Hey y'all, welcome back to a Monday, August 15th, 2022 edition here on the Chase Thomas Podcast, where I'm still the aforementioned Chase Thomas coming to you live from Knoxville, Tennessee. Got a fun Monday, August 15th, 2022 edition here on the program for you guys. We got Corbin Ford and Lauren Gunn to talk all things NBA. We talked about Westbrook and the Mavs and if there's a potential trade fit there this offseason, the addition of Christian Wood in Dallas and the loss of Jalen Brunson, expectations for your rookie Jaden Hardy. We talked about KD and the Pelicans, Raptors, Celtics, where he might end up, Kyrie a little bit in the Lakers. If we're down on the Bulls a little bit here on the program, and just kind of where we're at with Chicago Bulls and if people are forgetting about them going into next year. Timberwolves a little bit as well, along with the Philadelphia 76ers. So a lot of fun talking all things NBA with Corbin and Lauren here on the Monday edition of the program. Think you guys will like it as well. Don't forget, folks, you can check us out on YouTube, youtube.com/ChaseThomasPodcast. Like and subscribe. Check us out there. You can also email the program at ChaseThomasPodcast@gmail.com. Read me at sportsrenaissanceman.substack.com. Type your email, become a subscriber. That easy, that simple today. All right, Uncle Darren, let's go.
Chase Thomas Podcast. The Chase Thomas Podcast. My nephew needs me to record. See, I already hate it.
All right, hello, and welcome back to another episode of the Chase Thomas Podcast, taping this on a Sunday afternoon. The NBA Sunday shoot-around trio is back together. The regular season still a few months away, but there is some basketball to talk about, and you know, you don't want to go too long and just build up too much rust without Lauren and Corbin on this very program so that we're ready to go come the start of the regular season. Lauren Gunn, it's been a while. How are you?
I am good. Life is good. Summer's good. Getting busy with work, but I'm ready for basketball to be back. I'm a little, football is just, it's not quite doing it for me yet, being a Cowboys fan, which is just RIP. We're just going to slide right on by that one. But yeah, I'm ready for basketball to be back. That's for sure.
Absolutely. Corbin Ford also here. Corbin, good afternoon, sir. How are you?
Hello. Hello. I'm good. I mean, listen, I'm like, Lauren, I don't even have another sport. It's just basketball. So like, you know, got WNBA playoffs coming up and the Big Three playoffs to start. And then after that, it's going to be like a month of just nothing. And unfortunately, I'm like, Lauren, I'm a Lakers fan. So like, barring a trade, am I looking forward to the season? I don't know. So, you know, that the vibes are confused right now, but we move.
I mean, you got this week that report where the Lakers are they believe that they have more offers than just Kyrie, Hield, and Turner for Russell Westbrook. People are saying that the Lakers have multiple offers that are even better. They don't have to just do one of those two type deals, that there are more options and more potential suitors for Russell Westbrook in 2022. For instance, coming straight from, let me check my notes here, at the Lauren Gunn, noted longtime pals and just future backcourt mates, Russell Westbrook and Luka Doncic. Many people are saying, hey, exit stage left, Jalen Brunson, enter stage right, Russell Westbrook. And the fit, the situation, all seamless. The only caveat is that we wish Rick Carlisle was still the coach to try and coach those two point guards together. Lauren, what happened here? What's going on with the Russell Westbrook Mav stuff?
So, I mean, first, if you're following the Mavs or even care about the Mavs, you have to acknowledge that their pathways and moves and options are very limited, especially given the draft asset situation, just where they're at as of right now. And even the contracts, primarily the contracts more so than the draft picks. But the Russell Westbrook thing honestly just provides them a path to making a move for Russell Westbrook, gives them an opportunity to reset financially. I would actually be shocked if Russell Westbrook ever played a game in a Mavericks uniform. That's where I'm at, even though they clearly need point guard depth. I think some of it goes back to Mark Cuban saying, Russell Westbrook, you are not a superstar in his prime in OKC. And I think some of it goes back to just where the team is at. But at the same time, you've got Jared Dudley and you've got Jason Kidd who have relationships with Russell Westbrook. And so it's kind of like, okay, well, could Russ potentially look at, well, let's say, could the Mavs front office look at this as an opportunity to financially reset? And is that one of their best paths moving forward. And does Russell Westbrook look at this as an opportunity to kind of go back to honestly a similar situation to Washington, where he could really kind of take control of his narrative and kind of just say, hey, I am a really solid player in the NBA and I do deserve to be on many rosters. Where are they at with that? And right now, it would just really floor me to see everything aligned to where he would welcome coming to the Mavericks, because the reality is he wouldn't start. And I just don't know that that's something that he's on board with right now.
That's interesting. I'm growing more to the possibility that Russell Westbrook does not play in the NBA this year. I think that that's something that folks need to prepare for, where I think he's going down the Melo track, where he has not adjusted to how the league sees him now. And he still sees himself as like, I mean, it was not that long ago that we had the quote unquote big three with Melo, Paul George and Russell Westbrook, that was a trio that could, hey, maybe win the title. Melo was that final piece with that group. And then things got really bad. All the memes, they were really hard on Melo because of all the misses and all the open threes that he had in OKC that just were not falling. And then he's out of the league. And then there's this pushback from a lot of players where it's like, hey, there's no excuse for Carmelo Anthony not to be on a roster right now. And broadly speaking, that was true, is that, yes, Carmelo Anthony should be on a roster somewhere. But it took Carmelo Anthony to see himself as an eighth or ninth guy to get on a roster, where it was like, oh, those days are gone and I have to change how I see myself, change how I like, just I'm not that guy anymore. And teams everywhere don't see me as that guy anymore. And that's really, really hard for former all-stars. It's really hard for guys who have just been big time players in this league for over a decade. Like, that's a really tough adjustment, and we make it seem like it's a lot easier. I think Westbrook's about to hit that same point where I do think he's going to get moved. I don't think he plays another game in Lakerland. And like you said, Lauren, even if he gets moved to somebody like Dallas to clear up some cap space and clear up the books a little bit for Dallas, he doesn't play there. They're trying to get in the top four in the West. They're not trying to split possessions between Luka Doncic and Russell Westbrook next year. They're not doing that. And I don't think Luka would want to sign on for that. And you look around the league and he just strikes me as someone who is going to see, like, I want a promise of a starting spot. I want a promise of being the high usage guy on whatever team I sign with. And I just don't think he's going to be thrilled with the options. I mean, John Wall is kind of in a situation, the same situation now, and we'll see what happens in Clipperland. But I think it might be a year away, and then we get the talk of like, why is Russell Westbrook down on the roster? He could help Miami. He could help whoever as a third guard. And it's like, well, he doesn't see himself as Derrick Rose on the Knicks yet. And once he sees himself in that capacity, then he gets on a roster, and then he could be valuable. Because I do think there is value in Russell Westbrook at that kind of second, like a third guy off the bench that just, you know, 12 to 14 minutes, maybe swing a playoff game if you need just the spark and whoever you have going. Like, there are scenarios where Russell Westbrook still has value. I just think it requires Russell Westbrook to go through a really hard transition from I am not a star player in this league anymore to I am just fighting for my life. It's kind of like Allen Iverson was going through the same stuff after Denver. And I think that's where we're headed. What do you think, Corbin?
As a Westbrook fanish kind of guy, I am torn. I think that he is heading that way, yes. But like, let's not forget, you know, even Melo got five games of Houston before they realized it didn't work.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? So like, I think that, yeah, probably his time with the Lakers is done. I agree with you completely on that. I don't know if like he's done. I think he finds another team, it doesn't work out, and then he hits that Melo moment. I do agree with you there. And maybe, like you said, maybe it's an Allen Iverson moment, because Melo like had to change if you want to get back in the league. Does Russ feel he's in that part? Russ, part of the reason that makes him so great or has made him great in the past is that he doesn't conform to, you know, what folks have told him to do throughout his career. You know, turnover prone, out of control, way too many shots, yada, yada, yada. Like, he has been consistent in his soul-minded drive to play the way that he plays. And thanks to, you know, moments of, I mean, he has had great skill, obviously superior athleticism for most of his career. He's been able to get by on that. Well, now it's time to pay the piper, and maybe he doesn't want to do that. And if that is the case, well, then, yeah, you know, it's probably a wrap. It's funny. When I saw the question, I was like, oh, this is going to be easy. I'm going to pull up Jalen Brunson's stats from last year, you know, 2021, 2022. I know the 2021. I know that Russ had a triple-double 2020, 2021. So I'm going to just line them up, just state them. I'm going to say the facts. It didn't. Yeah, it really didn't. You know, Russ had the triple-double, and Jalen Brunson shot better across the board. Somehow, Russ shot more threes and shot 9% worse than Jalen Brunson did. It was a 40% three-point shooter 2021. Point being, it could work, right? It could even work if, let's say, you staggered it. But like Lauren said, staggering the primary ball-handling responsibility between Luka and Russ means that, no, Russ is coming off the bench, like you said. Is Russ at that stage you want to do that? I mean, no indication has been given so far that he is, right? Can't be a shooting guard, so he can't start alongside Luka. That's something went terribly wrong. And that's the option. That's all, folks. So, yeah, I mean, from a financial perspective, that I think is great for Dallas moving forward. With that money comes off the books, you know, some flexibility, I'd imagine. And, like, there was the relationships that Russ already had is helpful. But I will push back and say this. Russ has had tremendous relationships with LeBron and AD, and we saw what happened. So it's kind of on him and the mirror at this point, in my opinion. But, you know, I
hope. Corbin, what would you guess, as someone who watches every Laker game, what would you guess without looking what Russ's usage rate last year was?
26.
So that's closer to Anthony Davis, who was 24.9, right?
Oh,
that's the 94th percentile in the NBA for a big.
Okay. Ooh,
Russ was 30.4% usage rate. That is an MVP-type level usage rate. That's trade territory. Russell Westbrook, the jump, he is 33. I don't think people are ready. Like, he is going to have to cut that usage rate to 18 to 19% to be on a roster and to be a productive player in this league at this point. And that is a huge ask for Westbrook to go from 30%, where he is still so much of what LA did last year was run through Westbrook. And that guy, because it has worked for so long, to take the ball out of his hands as much as you're going to have to. Like, him becoming Bruce Brown for what Bruce Brown has done for the Nets makes a lot of sense for a lot of teams around the league. Like, the silliest one is, and Darvin Ham doesn't really have a choice, and it's not fair to Darvin, where it's like, oh, I've coached Drew Holiday for years in Milwaukee, and they do have similar frames. They really do. They're wired completely differently. There's no similarities in their makeup. Drew came into the league as a defense-minded player. He is always defense. He's a much better shooter. Like, yes, theoretically speaking, that would be great, but Russell Westbrook's 33. Now, if you were drafting Russell Westbrook and you're like, hey, I want you to be Drew Holiday out of UCLA, hey, maybe that's a possibility. That ship has sailed. So as much as that would be cool and make a lot of sense for Lakerland, that's not going to happen when Russell Westbrook's turning 34 this year. I'm not about it. But Lauren, I'm also curious, because this was something I remember the last time you were on the pod, was that the Mavs were kind of like they kind of had to bring Brunson back, because they couldn't do anything else. There's no other option for Dallas. Mm-hmm. Is kind of have to keep running with this core. Mm-hmm. And since on the pod, Brunson signed with the Knicks. And some people are saying that there was some behind the scenes stuff. Some people might suggest that his father being on the coaching staff might play a role. There might be some front office stuff there, but that seems like a stretch to me. I think it was purely basketball on the court reasons. And that's the only thing that makes sense to me, Lauren. But in terms of Christian Wood also entering the frame, which I don't think any of us really saw coming, that's also happened. So when you're looking at the state of this roster, does it make a lot more sense now? Are you surprised they've been able to do what they've been able to do? And how does losing Brunson affect what they're going to look like next year?
Yeah. So, I mean, the roster and the additions that they've made, with losing Jalen Brunson, obviously bringing in Christian Wood and even bringing in someone like JaVale McGee, they haven't had a true rim running 7-foot center the way JaVale McGee will operate in the system in a very long time. And so the team is going to function very differently than last year. Obviously losing Jalen Brunson, not ideal. That I personally believe is going to hurt them long, or more so in the long term than the short term. I think next year, between having Christian Wood, having JaVale McGee as this somewhat paint presence, and then getting even Tim Hardaway Jr. back to add to your depth off the bench and your points production, I think as far as offensive points production, they're going to be at somewhat of a net zero with losing Jalen Brunson and having someone like Spencer Dinwiddie to step up into that starting lineup and be that secondary playmaker, I think they'll kind of find themselves in an okay spot in that regard. But in terms of long-term options or pathways to really take that next step up, they do have a lot of hurdles in front of them to overcome. And I think that they're going to see that, which is why I really do think that they need to try and have a realistic conversation about this Russell Westbrook scenario, or even a couple of other players who are on high volume contracts towards the end of that their contracts. And so going into next year, I think they're going to be fine. But in terms of looking at the rest of the West and how they've all, a lot of teams have beefed up or are coming back healthy, I do think they're in a bit, in for a bit of a rude awakening. I really do believe that.
So when you say rude awakening, though, do you think this is a worse team on paper than what they were last year?
Yes.
Hmm. Do you think they believe that?
No.
Interesting, because that's what I'm curious about. It's like, you make that Wood trade because you think that this will, like, you can basically, the Dwight Powell minutes are gone, right? Like, this is, yes, just like, we don't have to worry about who Maxi Kleba doing a lot at the five against the Warriors or whoever. Like, we can just play Christian Wood 36 minutes and just live and die by him. Does that fit with him and Luka? Is it a clean fit? Is there some potential for some really rough growing pains between the two of them? Or is it something where Christian Wood can unlock more in his game in Dallas? Because I think the usage rate should go up, and I think there's going to be more expected of him, right?
Yeah, I mean, I think naturally you're going to have to anticipate and prepare for some growing pains, but I do believe Christian Wood is very aware of this opportunity that has kind of fallen into his lap. He's playing with by far the best point guard he's ever played with in his career. He's in a contract year. He's going to get, as a guy who can stretch the floor, he's going to get more open threes and more opportunities to be more impactful in ways that just have more variety and again, like you said, more usage than he ever has in his career. And he's going to be in a competitive situation. So even for him specifically, from a like selfish is the wrong word, but for him looking at potentially this next contract, whether it be in Dallas or whether it not, I mean, the Mavericks are going to have a lot of eyes on them because they have Luka, but this for him specifically is an opportunity to kind of rise to the occasion, figure out where he fits in a competitive system. You know, what do you need me to do? And it does, everything that he's saying looks like, hey, I just want to come in and impact winning, which is great, but we need to see it on the floor and how things blend together. There have been some conversations about him potentially starting the year coming off of the bench, which I can't even get into how absurd I think that is. I don't know. Some of the things that I've heard come out with JaVale in the starting lineup, potentially Christian Wood coming off of the bench, a lot of it I'm just not on board with. And I don't know how much truth there is to it, because not to go too far off track, but with the JaVale McGee signing, it did seem like they were like, hey, we need that 7-foot big veteran big man. And the only way to go get someone like JaVale McGee was to offer them more than 2 years and offer them the MLE instead of that minimum to come to somewhere like Dallas instead of a Brooklyn, a Phoenix, a Miami, whatever the case may be. So he also said that he was promised a starting spot as a part of that negotiation. So
JaVale was.
So I don't know how much truth there really is to that. I don't know if they're going to get to camp, start running with the lineups and say, actually, no. But seems like I personally think there's a decent chance that they start the year starting JaVale McGee next to Christian Wood and having to realize that, oh yeah, that's probably not our most effective lineup. And unfortunately, it's going to cost them a few games to do so.
Interesting. Corbin, what do you make of their roster? When you look at this group and where they're running right now, do you think they kind of overachieved and they kind of take a step back like Lauren, and that there is more to do? Or do you think there's more upside without Jalen Brunson and that there might just be another level for this Mavs team for the role guys?
I mean, see, it's hard to follow after the Mavs expert here, but I'm going to take the easy route and agree with her. Lauren, I agree completely. I just honestly think about it. Like, Jalen Brunson stepped up in a major way down the stretch, second half of the season, totally in the playoffs, right? You had a chemistry, you had a set kind of rotation, you had a style of play that worked. Like, subtly, that's changed a little bit. You know, one, you know, the guard depth is I imagine a little shaken just with the loss of Brunson and not really, in my opinion, adequate replacement there. JaVale McGee and Christian Wood, I mean, Christian Wood on his own was like, okay, that's cool. If that's your big win of the offseason, is it really a win? I don't know. Actually, I do. It's not. But, like, bringing JaVale McGee in only, like, complicates it potentially, which it shouldn't even do that. I'm not even getting to the contract JaVale has, which, like, get your money, man, but also, wow, why? It's a lot going on. And it's funky. And mind you, you know, Jason Kidd's worked with Funky this year with Dallas this past season. Different lineups. I mean, he didn't quite go all Rick Carlisle on him, but, like, there were some different strategic mismatches. And
I mean, he was using Frankie Smokes and Josh Green and company, and I don't think Carlisle's putting them on the floor.
There you go. Yes, it was a more effective Carlisle in terms of the meddling. But it indeed was, you know, some units that were interesting, that were unconventional. Well, now you've made it funkier, but that doesn't mean you made it better. And I am of the opinion that they did not. You know, I think Luka has a little more on the offensive end to manage. I think Christian Wood as an offensive play finisher is great, but it's not like he's a guy who can create his own shot consistently either. So you didn't bring another guy to do that. You just brought a few more guys who can finish plays and more pressure on Luka because you took away the one other guy consistently. I mean, you still got Spencer Dinwiddie, of course, who could also, you know, make plays for himself and others. So it's like, I don't know, more weapons, but also less help. Like, how you want to do that, you know? So I look at this almost like, I don't know, it feels like a LeBron from last year in terms of the roster, like messing around. And now, mind you, Lakers brought Russell Westbrook, totally different thing. But it's like, you had a system that worked. Like,
they kind of remind me of the Cavs with LeBron the first time. Like, the Cavs, like, Jurnicel Gauskas Cavs, where it's like, oh, man, LeBron literally has to do everything. And, like, you hope Mo Williams just overachieves enough. And you're like, well, this probably can't win a title, but Luka's so good that their ceiling is just so naturally high that we can't really panic.
Exactly. And what makes me annoyed about that, because you're right, it's a perfect example, but, like, unlike those LeBron teams, in this case, last year, the Dallas supporting cast really stepped up in moments. Jalen Brunson was a key part of their winning round one against Utah, you know, doing what they did against Phoenix. Like, it was almost like, as if, to extend your analogy, Mo Williams and Ogauskas and I'm trying to think of one other guy, Delonte West, had a key playoff stretch in 2008. And then they say, you know what? Let's bring in Anton Jameson. Let's bring in Shaq. Let's not bring those guys back. You know, LeBron, make it happen.
JaVale is like the Shaq in this situation.
There you go. You got it. So it's like, you actually get some signs of life from other guys outside Luka. That's what you want. That's perfect. So now you don't bring Brunson back. You bring in other guys who need to be more reliant on Luka, and you go, okay, great, you got it, kid. You're only 22. Like, I
agree. And I also think it's a low key. If Luka is not on this roster, I think it's fair to say, like, this has been an absolute disaster of the last couple of years in Dallas. Porzingis, what ended up happening there? And then to get what you got back for Porzingis is just, okay, that's a bummer. This kind of sucks. And then Jalen Brunson to leave as an unrestricted free agent and not to get like an Emmanuel Quickly, who would be nice if you had made the move. There was a requirement where the Knicks had to give up some of their young talent to make that work. That would have been really nice. And I think we would all feel better about the Mavs because, like, I like Quickly a lot and he would have made a lot of sense here. And now I don't really know how he fits long term in New York. But go ahead, Corbin.
I was going to say another thing, too. THJ is returning. Love Tim Hardaway. But, like, let's not forget some of what made Dallas Graham, Lauren will said it already, but, like, defensively, units, you know, that you had during Finney Smith and Reggie Bullock there. When I bring a guy who needs to have shots to be effective and is a step down the defensive end, yes, there's more minutes for him, that's great, but he's also not taking any pressure off of Luka if his shot's not falling. So now you have another subtle chemistry thing where, yes, teams, you know, he's been there for a minute. Hardaway has been there for a second, but, like, you look at the success Dallas had, that defense was rock solid on Donovan Mitchell, Mike Conley, Chris Paul, Devin Booker, everyone up until, you know, Steph Curry and Jordan Poole. That's fine. But, like, you know, now you're taking one less defender on the floor for that moment, unless you are committing going small ball with either Christian Wood, JaVale McGee. Yikes. And, that, like, I don't know. Oof. I don't know.
Is it just going to be Jaden Hardy? Is it is that the savior, Lauren? Is there enough? Like, how much pressure is on Jaden Hardy now? I just imagine, like, Mavs Twitter and, like, Summer League stuff where you're just like, oh, high upside, because he was looked at as a steal. No one really thought he was going to go that low. He was a potential lottery guy. Like, is there enough there that you've seen thus far to buy into Jaden Hardy having an important role right away and that Kidd would trust Hardy this early.
Oh, man. I think the thing about this current Mavs coaching staff is that they are not desperately. They are trying to show these young guys that Dallas is an opportunity and a place that you can grow and develop and have an opportunity in. And so I think that they will trust Jaden Hardy. Do I think that they're going to put a lot of pressure on him and set the expectations super high? No. Personally, I do think, like, as of right now, if you're looking at the roster, the Mavs' path forward and strategy is really, it seems to be hope that Jaden Hardy pops. And you just, that's not a strategy. And so with him specifically, let's start here. The Mavs do still have one open roster spot, and it does look like they're, to me, the fact that they haven't filled it says that, okay, we are involved in some of these trade conversations, and we are trying to figure out a way to bring something in that's not just like a last, okay, we're just going to sign someone random. And if they don't fill that spot via trade, I wouldn't be surprised if they go for a Kemba Walker, who they do have a relationship with, a DJ Augustine, one of these offensive oriented veteran point guards who they feel could trust to run the second unit if Spencer Dinwiddie doesn't start, which personally I do think over the course of the season he will establish himself as a starter if he's not on night one. So for them, as far as where Jaden Hardy fits into all of that, you know, he's not necessarily like a true point guard. I don't think that they view him that way. And so having him and having Frank Ntilikina coming off of the bench, I do think that they like the versatility there in terms of giving both of them opportunities, especially with how Frank played against Phoenix and what he kind of meant to their system and their adjustments. But I don't think as of right now, they have that true point guard who can run the second unit. And that is a big thing that they need to figure out, whether it be via trade or be via free agency.
Well, I think Sharif Cooper is out there, Lauren.
I want Sharif Cooper so bad. Sharif Cooper is like the exact thing that Dallas needs to low risk. You got to start getting creative because personally with how Dallas operates and the elements of them that are still predictable with the people that have been there through the regime change, a Kemba Walker signing is like perfectly expected. You have the history of an established relationship there, veteran point guard on paper. It makes a lot of sense. But when you take a step back, you're like, well, we really could probably try to stand to get creative and look at some of these guys that maybe got cut somewhere else or have had, you know, reported upside or whatever the case may be, just buzz in general. Maybe it's worth taking a swing. And if it doesn't pan out, and the system wasn't a good fit, oh well. But right now, if you're really looking at the state of the West and where you're likely going to finish next year, you should really try to start getting creative.
Yeah. You bet right now you wish you had Trey Burke, huh?
Oh, yeah. I sure do.
That's like a Mavs tradition. Like, find the good college kid, the college guard who could shoot and score, and that's just – he gets reinvented in Dallas. Corbin, when you look at KD now going to hold out, it's out there that it seems like KD is planning. There was like a whole little contract thing that was released over the last couple of days where it's like he's getting a certain amount of money now and that he doesn't really get hurt financially. I'm not a cap expert, but where is Larry Kuhn when you need him on this matter? Because I am not an expert on that front, but it seems like there is a financial, not incentive, but there's not going to be a financial blowback to KD holding out and potentially missing games to start the year if he has not moved. I am curious now because KD, a lot's happened. It feels like just last week that he requested reportedly to remove both Sean Marks and Steve Nash as his head coach and GM to stay in Brooklyn. That is obviously not going to happen. Because that kind of precedent, you might as well just sell the team if you're Josai, because that kind of move, just you can't really come back from that one. So if you ever have another start, it's like, no, we run this, and it's just you can't. And KD knew that, and now Boston's out there, which I have thought a lot about, and I think because Phoenix is out the door, Phoenix probably made the most sense of anyone. And I'm sure Lauren's quite happy that that's not a possibility anymore, that that's not the case. But I am curious, if it happens, what does the right KD trade look like for you? Is it Boston based on what's left? Does New Orleans or Toronto get serious about it now that it seems like, oh, he's really not playing, and the value, the price has to go down a little bit because they don't want this looming for months on end. They don't want to hold out. They don't want to go through this drama anymore. And I don't think it, I think we're going to look at the KD trade and be like, oh, that's rough. That's rough for Brooklyn, because I don't think you're getting Scotty Barnes anymore. I think the best case scenario is still BI in New Orleans. And if I'm New Orleans, I mean, Zion and KD, even if it's just for a couple of years, that sells so many tickets and you're the smallest market in the NBA. I very much consider that. Like, I very, very much consider that. And just the upside of like maybe two top five players in this league on the state, two very, very different offensively, just dominant players, where that's must see television and must see TV. And I love BI, but that's also a great haul if you're Brooklyn. What does the trade look like for you? If you had to guess August 14th with the state of affairs with KD and the potential holdout, where do you think it ends up?
I mean, I still think it's gonna be Boston. I just think that New Orleans is at a spot where, yeah, it'd be nice, but also, you know, BI is not quite as good as KD. Arguably, I mean, he's in that same discussion now, at least as current players stand, right? In the same, if KD's top 10, I'd say BI is like in the top 20, somewhere like that, you know, somewhere in that ballpark, but also almost a decade younger. Like, I did not realize this, but BI is entering his age 25 season. Like,
yep.
Didn't realize that. Jaylen Brown, on the other hand, is entering age 26. Not that huge, but the only difference for me is that you have basically a younger player who is a better scorer who is also under contract for a year longer in Ingram than you would in Brown. So if you do get Jaylen Brown, I mean, that's a pretty good comp. That's not a bad consolation prize, right? But I think that you want it to be BI, a package of picks, maybe a young player if you could squeeze it from the Pelicans. But aside from the Pelicans going, it's Kevin Durant. I don't see why they feel the need to make that move if they feel strong about BI and have him locked up. Like, yes, you're right. KD and Zion would be great if they're on the court together. At the same time, KD's been injury prone the last couple of years, 34. Zion is the first game in, what, two seasons? So you could have just the best looking bench in terms of did not play because of injuries for 2 years or so. Whereas what you know with CJ McCollum, what you know with, you know, Herb Jones, Jose Alvarado, you know, B.I., like, you have a nice, solid core. Do you really want to mess with that? You know, David Griffin just made the frantic trade that may have saved his New Orleans career at the trade deadline, bringing CJ McCollum in. Do you really want to throw all that in for KD? On the one hand, you say yes because KD. On the other hand, build on what you have. For the first time, you've actually inspired a level of, okay, some I'm not even sure what the word is. Like, we've solidified something. We have something solid here, and we can build upon that for the first time since, what, 2017, 2018? And even with that unit, or 2018, 2019, even then it was Anthony Davis, Rajon Rondo, and Drew Holiday. Like, this is a younger group that can really grow together and already make some noise in the West. I just don't know if you feel the need to make that move. So I just feel like Boston is just desperate enough to do it. And I don't know if Brooklyn really wants those problems of having to have this go into training camp, because I feel like training camp is the unofficial deadline for whatever's going to happen to happen. You really don't want to have round two of the Brooklyn drama that you had last year with Kyrie and the vaccine, and how does KD feel about it, and how does Steve Nash feel about it, and yada, yada, yada. But now we have it. Well, KD's not here. Steve Nash, how do you feel? You know, in some reporters ask a really dumb question. Do you feel like you lose your job or give your job for KD? Say something dumb. I just can feel it, you know, and just avoid all that. So I think Boston is the end result, but I'm with you, Chase. Like, if you can get BI from New Orleans, you do that. And if I'm New Orleans, I'm definitely thinking about it, if only because it's Kevin Durant. You know who he is.
That's cold, though. If Brad does this, if Brad ultimately trades Jaylen, where he had a case for being the best Celtic in the finals this past year, and yes.
Brad didn't trade Isaiah Thomas, but
no, that's what I'm saying. That wasn't Brad. This is cold. Like, this is a cold world.
Yeah.
If you move, this is just such a rarity of like you moving 1A, 1B for another star, but like you said, Corbin, significantly older, significantly more mercurial for these two guys that have bought in. But at the same time, Lauren, this was a team that was 500 in February and we were wondering if they were going to blow it up before the deadline anyway. Like, this was something where it's like, maybe this has run its course. This is two talented guys, but like, ultimately, this is not going to work. The offense is not going to get to where it needs to be. And then, of course, we had the whole summer. We had the whole drama with Marcus Smart and Ime Udoka and the conversations. And then it was like, all right, free flowing offense is back. And now we're one of the best offenses in basketball. And now we just went to the finals. But it's Kevin Durant and Kevin Durant, Jason Tatum in a 7-game series. Just beating those two 4 times out of 7 is going to be very, very difficult when both are healthy. What do you think, Lauren?
I still lean towards Boston making the most sense. Personally, I think it will end up being Jaylen Brown and Marcus Smart. I do not think Brooklyn is going to be able to get Robert Williams out of this one. And if you're Boston and you're looking at, okay, we make the move for KD, we lose Marcus Smart, who's a very big part of their identity and what they do. You do still have Malcolm Brogdon. You do still have, and bear with me here, but even Al Horford, who's become a big part of their system. You still have Robert Williams, and they've kind of managed to develop this kind of 1-2 punch. And then, yeah, you've got Jason Tatum, Kevin Durant. I mean, it's very difficult to try and turn that away. And even though they just made it to the finals, if I'm looking at that team, how can you not put them right back up there? Whereas of right now, I don't know that everyone is putting them as a guaranteed, even Eastern Conference Finals repeat trip. So for Boston, I do think that they do seriously consider this. And especially when you're looking at how many years are remaining on Jaylen Brown's contract versus how many years you will get of a Kevin Durant at this stage in his career. And then looking at Toronto, I'm right there with you, Chase. I think Scottie Barnes, especially with what they're seeing from him this offseason, I really don't think that there's any chance that they would consider moving him now, whereas a couple months ago or even maybe 1 month ago, I might have said, well, maybe you should consider it. Now I'm kind of out on that, so I don't really see Toronto being an option. And then New Orleans, I'm in a similar boat with Corbin. I don't think that, based on everything I've heard and read about New Orleans, I do not think that they want to blow up this core that they're putting together, because Brandon Ingram has expressed that he's locked in. He's excited for what they're putting together, the momentum that they're building. Zion seems to be, from everything that he said, locked in, ready to go, and excited about this group that they have together that they are putting together. And even guys like Herb Jones and Trey Murphy, New Orleans is not going to want to lose those two guys either when trying to put together a package for KD. So even on top of Brandon Ingram. So personally, I don't see New Orleans seriously entertaining this one, given the age difference, given the mindset that everyone and the page that they're all on, including the coaching staff and the front office. It's very difficult to be an organization that's in finish in the state that you did last year and then go into this year having so much optimism. That doesn't happen very often. And so for them to take a swing on a Kevin Durant, I do think it's an intriguing move, but I do not think that they will seriously consider it.
Interesting. I want it to be Toronto. Like, I want Toronto to just be the team that, like, every couple of years they are just like, Masai, draft, I develop, and we overachieve. And then, by the way, we're going to overachieve enough where we just swoop in and take a top three player when healthy and know that the player is not going to be here long term. He's like, I don't want to do the Toronto winters for 3 to 4 years, but I'll win you a title. Like, that would be a great gig if you're Masai and the Raptors, right? Like, you're just, hey, we'll just go. We have a great culture, arguably the top three, maybe one of the top two best coaches in the NBA, and Nick Nurse, and we could just win the title with this group, with KD, Pascal, and I'm trying to think I don't know. Does Brooklyn take Pascal as the leader in that trade, or is it Scottie? Like, I don't know. Scottie would actually hurt more than I think Brandon Ingram, if I had to look at the two, because I think when I talked to Coach Thorpe about Scottie a few months ago, the fact that he has written and compared him to a blend between like Magic Johnson and Scottie Pippen is just, I mean, that's a tough one to move on from. And what he was doing as a rookie, I think his upside and ceiling's higher than BI. Cause I think there's a chance he could be the best player in a contender. BI can be the second best player in a contender. So I think Brooklyn would be kind of in a weird spot, but then Jaylen Brown, it would be his team. Jaylen Brown in Brooklyn would also just be a lot of fun to see what he actually looks like as the lead guy. No Tatum, no Gordon Hayward, no whoever. Like, this is your team in Brooklyn. Let's see what you can actually do as the highest usage guy on the roster. Do I think the other thing too is, like, is Ben Simmons just a part of this? Is he going to be a part of this roster? Does Ben Simmons ever play basketball again? I don't know. Like, there's just so many different things, but I'm so excited because this means Kyrie's on the move too. Like, Kyrie is also getting moved because he's not sticking around if KD's sticking, if is out of here. And Corbin, I know you're excited about this, but are you actually excited about the daily updates? And I don't know if you've perused Kyrie Irving's Twitter account. I don't know if you've perused Kyrie Irving over the last couple years. Do you actually want that? Do you actually want Kyrie Irving on your professional basketball team in 2022 and will enjoy the full ride and the full scope of Kyrie and LeBron back together?
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah, I would. I mean, here's the thing. I get all the noise outside of, you know, the basketball court and sometimes on it when he decides not to play. I get the enigma that is Kyrie, the morning meditations. I've tried to read them. They're interesting. I get all of that. But at the end of the day, can it get worse than what it is now? I find that very hard to believe. I mean, it's possible, but I find that very hard to believe. We were booing Russell Westbrook on his home court. They were having choruses of no when he got the ball in the corner to shoot. Like the tense standoffs between Russ and the media. When you had LeBron AD telling Russ, we're trying to let Russ be Russ. Russ coming right back after saying, well, we all know that's not true. No. I just, no. If Kyrie's not there, the biggest news is that Kyrie isn't there. We're not, most of us wish Russ wasn't there. Like, and I like Russ. I'm just saying, no. But on the court, I mean, that match is perfect. You know what I mean? You got someone who can
drive alongside.
It won a championship. Your turn, my turn with LeBron.
Yeah.
You're a primary ball handler.
Hold on. So is AD number three in this situation now?
Absolutely.
Oh, no.
I think he's number three.
You only won the title with him as number one, though. The reason you won the title in the bubble is because he was number one.
No.
That's not the same AD.
Yeah. And we also want on a not to be replicated.
If he's gone, then you trade everybody.
Listen, my goal would be to trade Russ and AD for Kyrie and KD, if that were possible. 27-29 first round picks. Let's go. Like, that's what I would do.
That is some smoke.
Like, I was looking at Russ's numbers and, like, comparing the last 2 years with his 2018-2019 New Orleans seasons. And across the board, we're not just talking the raw numbers, talking free throw rate. We're talking attempts, all of that. It's been down. And he's only getting older. Like, no. And often
– KD and LeBron on the same team would be cool as hell.
It really would. Yeah, like, I mean, you get – whatever. If you take Russ, AD, and Ben Simmons, that's funky as all hell. But, like, make it happen, whatever, Brooklyn, like, do you. But, like, with Kyrie and LeBron, yeah, absolutely. I think that Kyrie is the perfect player. How many guys on your hand can you say, okay, is he a point guard or a dominant shooting guard that has survived the LeBron James experience without in some way diminishing his role to a drastic degree? We saw what happened with Dwayne Wade. Every other guy he's been surrounded by has been either shooters like a Mo Williams, Delonte West, or made into shooters like what happened with Lonzo Ball, you know? Or he's the point guard and he's surrounded with guards who are point guards, but really they're defensive guards, like Avery Bradley, or KCP's a shooting guard. Like, it doesn't work. The only guy who survived that experience and played somewhat the same way is Kyrie. And with LeBron getting older and Kyrie seemingly entering his prime, right, age 30, 31, like, he can play alongside LeBron. He can manage those minutes when LeBron sits reasonably well. The numbers weren't super great in Cleveland, but, like, on the floor, better than Russ. And then he can also play off of AD in a way that Russ simply can't. So, yeah, I'm waiting. Like, that's what I'm saying. Like, please bring it to me. 2K20, that's the first trade I'm making. I'm definitely one of the old school Jordans.
Do you know when the last time Kyrie Irving played more than 60 games?
Yeah. Wasn't it Cleveland? Like, 20?
No, it was Boston. It was Boston. 2018-2019. 67.
Oh, the year after he got injured. Oh, wow.
He played 20 the year after in Brooklyn. He played 54 in 2020-2021. He played 29 this past year. And he also reportedly wanted 60 games part of his next contract and to not play any more back-to-backs ever and to take at least take some significant time off during the season. The problem with all of that, so I get what you're saying in terms of like the actual on-court fit with those guys.
Yes.
The problem with the Lakers now is their depth is gone. When they traded for Russell Westbrook, everybody was out the door. There is nothing left. After the Anthony Davis and Russell Westbrook trade, they have no depth. Austin Reeves has to start for them this year. Like, he is such an important piece now that Austin Reeves is an important player. They need the health of Thomas Bryant and Damian Jones in the year 2022. LeBron James is playing 60-ish games next year. Anthony Davis is playing 60-ish games next year. Kyrie Irving has not played 82 games, I think, in his whole career, if you look back. Yeah, the most he's ever played is 75, and that was when he was 22. You cannot win. Like, the West is too tough. The West is too deep. There is too much depth everywhere else. That this league, to get through the gauntlet of an 82-game season, you have to have depth. And you have to have those guys to supplement when Kyrie is out on a Tuesday, when AD is out for a month, when LeBron takes his January vacation to get right. Like, LeBron's too old. He can't do it by himself anymore. Like, there is a cost to building around LeBron and AD at this point in their careers. They got the title, so that's all that matters. But, like, they're not a playoff team next year. I said they weren't a playoff team this past year. If you get Kyrie Irving, they are still not a playoff team. Like, there's no path. Like, the Lakers are so screwed, and I will maintain that LeBron's played his last important basketball game already.
No more. Chase, please. I'm about to cry right now. I was tired. My lips started trembling. Please. Okay? Listen. We got 78 games from us last year, and mm-hmm. we were comfortably out the playoffs. I'm just trying to hold on to hope, please.
Yeah, because Russ plays. Like, for everything about Russ, that dude's available. That is a man who shows up to work and plays basketball. Now, do you want him to show up and play basketball right now, for your team? Maybe not. But the man shows up. The man plays. He'll play 34 minutes, no problem.
Congratulations, Chase.
I think he led the Lakers in minutes last year, didn't he?
He had to have.
Oh,
like, Russ is a durable player. I mean,
I'm sorry, Corbin, but it's over.
Wow. Listen, I got to keep hope alive, and you're right. I mean, you gave some very valid, devastating points. I don't know. Like I said, I would rather have – you're right. Everything you said, like, dang it, I am looking at Damian Jones and Thomas Bryant to be – like, really big pieces of our front court rotation that allow AD to play the four. And yes, Lonnie Walker, we gave you the entire taxpayer mid level, which I thought was crazy. Like, you need to step up and give us something that we got from Malik Monk.
You downgraded, yeah. Malik Monk was a better player for you guys. He was maybe your most important role player last year. He's out the door.
I'm like, why did we give him the money we should have got Kendrick Nunn? You forget Kendrick Nunn.
Alex Caruso, not on this roster. Could have helped a lot.
Kendrick Nunn is basically an offseason addition. All right.
Think about it. You sound like Dallas Mavericks.
I was so mad. All I could think about was the Mavs, and I thought about you absentmindedly on draft night when Jaden Hardy kept freaking slipping. And I was like, okay. Like, I can get my head wrapped around this. Like, the upside play is huge. Mm-hmm. Like, you know, some off-ball from scratch offensive creation. Like, we can use that right now. And we took Max Christie. And I'm sorry, I'm stuttering. Wow. Rob Pelinka's like, well, you know, we thought he could be a lottery pick next year. We're playing for right now. We're not playing for next year. But like, he could be a lot of things next year. But we need somebody right now. And I thought Jaden Hardy was that guy, mm-hmm. potentially, who could actually get some minutes and maybe be a Malik Monk guy under team control. And this is what we did. I'm having a conniption right now. I can't. Like,
no. I'm sorry. Unfortunately, the future of the Lakers is just built on Twitter posts as Corbin goes away for this, because I think to put a bow on the Lakers portion of this is that they are now in the full on, let's just get to Bronny and have that beautiful moment of Bronny checking in with the Lakers as the Lakers are 8-25. AD is missing a lot more time. He's not available. Kyrie Irving is on his next team. And we have that heartwarming moment of LeBron getting to share the floor as the Los Angeles Lakers fall 123-97 to the Cleveland Cavaliers in crypto.com arena.
Ouch. I mean, we got the Lakers front office filming documentaries right now to be on mm-hmm. the move. At a time we need to be working, I'm going to watch it, absolutely.
But
that's the point. Like, we need to be working on making moves happen. And you're right. Like, it's run like a family business. I get it is one, but it's run like an incompetent family business, because the moves that we made, and I don't want to get on my soapbox again of everything they've done over the last couple of years, but it's one misstep after another, again and again and again, to the point that, like you said, I don't see the path. I don't see the
No. Path. They're not a playoff team. I just cannot wait to see people talk themselves in once Kyrie gets traded, they're a contender.
They're playing maybe? No?
I mean, I guess if you want dark times, bleak times.
It's pretty dark. Yeah, I'm not going to lie. I feel, yeah. He's really morning, Chase.
I'm sorry, man.
Oh, good.
I'm sorry. Lauren, mm-hmm. I think this is interesting, though, too. When you look at Chicago, when we think about the East, they get Zach LaVine back. Like, it was kind of a question of, like, are we sure Zach LaVine's going to stay in Chicago? And then Zach LaVine stayed in Chicago. And when this team was healthy, when Patrick Williams was healthy, when DeMar DeRozan, who had an MVP-type season this past year, mm-hmm. you look at this lineup, you get Patrick Williams back, hopefully you get Lonzo Ball back. That's a big part of this, is you need a healthy Lonzo Ball. Mm-hmm. But I don't know what to make of Chicago. And I think because they kind of overachieved last year, where they shot up to the people were like, oh, they're a play-in team probably. Oh, actually, they're going to gobble up a bunch of regular season wins and they're going to be a top four seed maybe. And then injuries kind of put a damper on all of that. Do we think we should believe a little bit more in Chicago next year with a healthy Patrick Williams and a healthy Lonzo Ball? Or do you think what we saw at the tail end is more of who they are, and they're still probably a 5-8 to 9 seed in the East next year?
God, I mean, is it weird if I say yes to both? I mean, I think that you have plenty of reasons to believe in them. I think them finishing 5-8 says more about the state of the East and some of those potential top 1-4 seeds. But I do really like their roster. I think they've got a lot of really solid players. And even though Lonzo Ball is a big part of it and Alex Crusoe staying healthy is a part of it, having AO, Dalen Terry, Kobe White, like Goran, like you have a really solid, deep roster. And it's very intriguing. But I will say a little, and this might be a little bit of a curveball here, but I do think that it's not as rainbows and butterflies over in Chicago as some people might think it is. And I hope.
So why do you think that is?
I don't think everybody's on the same page and as happy with each other as it seems.
Oh, is this a off-air chat?
It might need to be an off-air chat.
Okay. Interesting. Corbin, what do you think? Do you share Lauren's pessimism on Chicago next year?
I'm ready for the off-air chat, but no.
Yeah.
I mean, okay, let me say this. I do think they have a lot of pieces together. Zach LaVine is Zach LaVine. I think that, and DeMar, I mean, they have plenty of pieces in place to be a really solid team in the East.
Mm.
I think as little as the next 6 months, if the start of the season doesn't go well, to maybe 3 years absolute max, it's done.
Well, I mean, think about this, and we have to throw this in here. When you think about the Bulls and where they were at last year, this could be a fun exercise. Celtics, playoff team, correct?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Okay. Sixers, playoff team.
Yes.
Absolutely.
The Raptors, playoff team.
Yes.
Yeah. Cavs, playoff team.
I think so.
Barring health, yes.
The Bucks.
Yes.
Sure.
The Heat.
Yeah.
Yeah.
The Hawks.
Sorry, Chase.
Hold on. I will block you from this call.
I'm kidding.
I don't know if you saw that DeJounte Murray has that dog in him. Paolo Banchero figured out.
I do not like DeJounte Murray. Fell so far. I went from not caring about the guy to actively disliking him. Like, because the way he's been treating some of these guys. I mean, Paolo was weird, but even just the run-of-the-mill guys up the street knocking the ball off. I mean, he's been very aggressive for reasons I can't explain. Like, dude, I mean, you were an injury replacement all-star. I'm not trying to say – it's a bad thing. Also, it's a great
thing. I'm sending clip to DeJounte and Hawks right now. I need that in his earbuds every day.
All I'm trying to say is, like, he's going off. Like, I don't know. It feels like this is weird energy from this guy. Like, yeah,
he's never played on a good team before. He's playing with a top five, top 10 player next year.
You're right. He's never played on a good team before. 2017 Spurs, you remember that?
No, they were not good. That was not a good basketball team.
I mean, they had that was Kawhi's last year, great year. But the point I'm trying to get is,
was DeJounte on that team?
Yeah, he was. He was drafted 2016.
But did he play on that team? He wasn't playing.
I think I'm gonna look it up now. Now you put me on the spot. You know,
I don't recall them crossing over at all. I have no DeJounte Murray memory of Kawhi.
61-21. Boston Western Conference Finals against the Warriors. DeJounte Murray was on the team. How many games did he play? 38 games, 8 started.
Okay.
Okay.
So, there.
I thought he came in right after. I thought he was right after. So that there you go, Corbin.
There you go. I'm saying, but that's not even that. I'm like DeJounte as the lead dog to a team that comfortably wasn't making the playoffs last year. Like, I'm just saying, check it a little bit. We talked about Sony Chase, but like, anyway, I just haven't been a big fan of the vibes emanating from DeJounte. That's all I'm saying.
When we talk about vibes, the amount of fights and the amount that Trae Young and DeJounte Murray are going to piss off so many people in this league this year, I cannot wait. It is going to be musty. Like, come playoff time, you thought Trae Young was a playoff villain. We get DeJounte and Trae in the playoff series together. I mean, based on the early returns from DeJounte this summer and what we already know about Trae, I cannot wait, because they are going to be hated around the league. I can't wait for the anonymous sources tweet where it's like, people really despise how the Hawks are going about things, or they are really despising going up against Trae and DeJounte, and that they're not as good as they think they are, and blah, 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 blah. Like, it is going to be a whole thing all year long. I'm very excited for that, because I didn't know DeJounte, like you said, Corbin, I didn't know he had this in him. I didn't know there was this other side to DeJounte, and I'm here for it.
I didn't answer your question. I apologize for that. Do the Hawks make the playoffs? I think they're in about the same position they were last year.
Well, that's possible. Okay. That brings us back. So if that's the case, then where do the Bulls fall in that? Like, are we sure they are a playoff team next year? Which sounds crazy, but because we like their roster, we like some of the guys. I don't know. Lauren's out. Lauren.
I think that the Hawks with, and not even just the DeJounte Murray addition, but I think some of the guys that like, that will now have increased roles, like in terms of Bogdanovich with Kevin Herter out, Jalen Johnson with Danilo Gallinari out, Onyeka Okongwu. Like, I think that there's more room for them to just be a better overall roster. And so I really kind of look at Cleveland and Chicago kind of towards. So I have a little bit more. I'm a little higher on Atlanta than I am Chicago right now. And that obviously can change. Maybe I'll be wrong. But I just think Chicago's got some things they need to figure out.
I cannot wait for this off-air chat.
Me neither. I'm also low on Chicago, just to answer. I think that, honestly, like, if your biggest like off-season takeaway as just a person watching, you know, the league is that they were trying to duck the tax, the luxury tax, like, optics or not, because let's be real, like, who would they have used that mid-level exception on that would have been a difference maker? That is the question, just seeing the other mid-levels that were signed, right? But the fact that that's the biggest, like, takeaway from that doesn't do you any favors. Other than that, I mean, Dalen Terry, number 18 pick, like, looks solid, like, as a glue guy, okay. Like, that's not making any major waves. Aside from that, you sign Andre Drummond, who I didn't realize is only 29. It's kind of crazy. But also think about this. He's only 17 months older than Zach LaVine, who you just re-signed, who's been battling any injury, whose best season was last year, and that was playing second fill to DeMar DeRozan, who was on a heater last year. Like, he was that guy last year, but also is going to be 33 coming up. Do we really expect his defense to improve? No. Do we expect his offense to be as deadly as it was this past year? I'm not overly optimistic. Then you have the uncertain. I mean, look at DeMar, and mind you, some of this I think was him not being optimized correctly in San Antonio, because if you look at his numbers, they just dramatically were so low, like barely over 20 points a game in San Antonio. But also the way he was getting his shots, that sort of thing, to be the primary offensive engine, primary operating from what, foul line extended to the rim, I don't see it as consistent, right? Then you sign Goran Dragic, 36-year-old. Like, you're pretty much joining a crowded Bulls backcourt, right? You still have Io, you still have Lonzo if he gets healthy, you still have Alex Caruso. If Goran Dragic's insurance for ball, okay, that's fine. But, like, Dragic's kind of had an inconsistent year in Brooklyn last year. Like, let's not forget.
I mean, he's probably cooked. I think he is in the Udonis Haslem role at this point. He needs to just be the vibe.
Oh, wow.
He is a borderline
coach. Are we watching the Euro basket? Hello, people.
Goran Dragic is done.
It's different. We saw him in Brooklyn, Lauren. It was not great. And, like, here's the thing. He said overseas, like, he's been quoted, that he's been promised, like, a prominent role of up to 20 minutes, upwards of 20 minutes a game. Like, the Bulls have made that promise. If you renege on that, does Dragic, noted the center in Phoenix, in Miami, when things didn't go his way, look like he's going to take that just sitting down? No, that's additional drama next to whatever is already going, right? Later, yes. And then, if he is playing up to 20 minutes a game and he's cooked, Well, now you just have a net negative on the floor for that long, assuming a lot of ball handling duty. So, I mean, I just ran through your offseason. I don't know. I'm just not very optimistic about it. You're asking for Zach LaVine to improve on his game while still conceding somewhat to DeRozan, or DeRozan to concede to Zach LaVine. And do you really trust Zach LaVine as the number one option long term? The Bulls did by giving them that extension, but, like, should they?
Yeah, I mean, I think that dynamic that he's talking about right there, the give and take between DeMar and Zach itself, is a very underrated, under-talked about aspect of the Bulls' long-term success, for sure.
There you go. I like it. I'm excited. The last thing that we'll wrap up here with this. Lauren, your favorite NBA offseason team thus far? Who do you think's had the best offseason?
God, it's so hard to say. I want to say Detroit, but I think that that's kind of a boring answer. So I'm going to actually say, and it's going to be a hot take, Minnesota.
I agree.
I think them taking a risky move, making a risky move when you are the most talked about, or one of the most talked about, oh, we're going to lose our star. It's just a matter of time with losing Karl Anthony Towns, to turn that around to saying, okay, well, now we've made a risky move, kind of an all-in move. And it's a beggars can't be chooser situation when you're a Minnesota, a Dallas, a team in that situation. So I respect them for doing that. I like drafting Wendell Moore. I think that was I'm high on him. I think that was a solid selection. And then even the free agency signings they've made, bringing in guys like, or bringing back Taurean Prince, bringing in Kyle Anderson, Bryn Forbes, like, they have made decent additions. They're a pretty well-rounded roster. And then keeping Jaden McDaniels in the Rudy Gobert trade is huge for them. So for me, it's Minnesota, but I do think that there are lots of other teams who have had really kind of under the radar, set themselves up very well moving forward. I think there are lots of teams that have done that.
Interesting. What about you, Corbin?
That's a really good one. I'm going to go with Philly, though. I think that you look at a healthy, inspired James Harden, you look at a Joel Embiid coming off the best season of his career, and now you add two-way players, you know, in PJ Tucker, in Daniel House. Let's not forget a really nice acquisition from Memphis in De'Anthony Melton. We're bringing in perimeter shooting and toughness. And yes, PJ Tucker, 37, that could be scary toward the end for sure. And he might fall off next, you know, this upcoming season, but he has in the last couple of seasons so far, you know, taking on the top perimeter option. And you can stagger him alongside Daniel House, who's credible enough from that end as well. Also, you know, Tucker shot, 41% from three last season. Really good rebounder. House shot the exact same percentage, albeit in a lesser stint in Utah, and was obviously one of their best defenders, you know, which doesn't say a lot for Utah, but in their playoff series, like, you were looking at House really make an impact on that end. So you bring those two guys in. Melton shot 37% from three last year with Memphis. Now you have guys who can hold their position, maybe swing up a position, and knock down shots off of penetration from Harden or the interior play of Embiid. So now, instead of those, you know, corner swing passes going to, you know, Matisse Thybulle, you know, or George Yang, who, you know, shot credibly from three, they're going to much better options, particularly in the corners as well. So I think you have that. Again, it comes down a lot to Embiid and Harden, as it should. But Embiid and Harden as your one and two are a pretty scary group to begin with. And listen, maybe they're in play for a Kevin Durant trade. I don't see it, but they patch things up. We've already seen them kind of hanging out in Europe and getting shots up together and such. You know, Philadelphia is on KD's list of preferred teams. You might lose, you know, Tyrese Maxey, which, you know, might in that you would definitely lose Tyrese Maxey, and that would hurt. But like KD, you know, those at core with Embiid and Harden, come on, just the inside outside of KD and Embiid would be monstrous. And that front line would be tall. Like, just saying, they take my best offseason. I think they just took a team and somehow managed to fuse the perfect hybrid between a James Harden type team and a Joel Embiid type team.
I like both, because I also see a path to both of those two teams being the best regular season team in their respective conferences. I would not be surprised if Minnesota's number one in the playoff stand going into the first round of the playoffs. I would not be surprised if they're the one seed. I also wouldn't be surprised if Philly's the one seed in the East, even with or without Kevin Durant. I think, for all the reasons you just laid out, Corbin, that is very much a possibility. What we've seen from Anthony Edwards as a 19-year-old to this point, where he is on track to be the best player in basketball in the next 2 years. I think that matters. And this happens faster, where, I mean, Memphis had the big jump with Ja and company, and you saw the health, but the Memphis stuff's not real. I that's probably the one where I don't like being cynical on the Memphis stuff, but that because those fans are awesome. And look, John Morant's a lot of fun. John Morant, I just, the 82 games plus the playoff run plus the way he plays plus Jaren Jackson is just not going to be healthy. He's not a healthy player, but when he is, he's fantastic. And we saw that where they really, really push the Warriors when they're all healthy. But I don't see it over the course of a full regular season and a full playoff. I think it's just built in a way where it's just not sustainable. I think Minnesota is the most sustainable, where Kat's going to play, Anthony Edwards is going to play. We know Rudy Gobert and what he does in the regular season. And you look at their five, I think Chris Finch is a really good coach. And I think they're building like they're a better, a more upside Utah Jazz, where like Anthony Edwards, I think, has far more upside than Donovan Mitchell does as a lead playmaker on any kind of contender. And Kat is going to fit really well with Gobert. And I just think they're going to be an absolute menace in the regular season. I think they're going to gobble up so many victories, and we'll see what happens come playoff time. But I'm drinking the Anthony Edwards Kool-Aid, and that guy is going to be, I would be shocked. I don't know if that y'all agree with this, but I would be shocked if he's not the best player in basketball in the next 2 to 3 years. I would be very, very surprised.
The best player in basketball?
Yeah, in the next 2 to 3 years.
You would be surprised if he's not.
Yes.
I'm with it.
What is his weakness? Like, I don't know. Like, this playoff run where I don't know who I would trade Anthony Edwards for in the next 2 to 3 years. Like,
I wouldn't trade him. I think the weakness is his shooting consistency. And that's, in this day's NBA, the easiest thing to improve upon.
Yeah.
I agree. And so I don't hate the take, but obviously, yeah. I've got Luka Doncic on my team, so I'm very hesitant to.
Like, he just turned 21, and what we just saw, and I mean, like, I love Luka too. I mean, he shot 35% from three last year.
Mm-hmm. Yeah,
I mean, he was league average, and he's going to shoot threes. He's going to get to that 40% range. I think his form looks good. I think he's going to continue to evolve there. The other thing too is just, he's going to get to the line more. I think that's going to be a big part of his game, because he's averaging about 4 a game. Like, that's probably the final step, because he's still averaging 21, 4-4 without really getting to the line all that much. Once he starts posterizing people more, once he starts just backing smaller guards down and just really ruining a lot of people's lives every single night. And because of his personality, like, Anthony Edwards just seems like the absolute alpha. I'm going to be the best player in this series. And I just see it. Like, I'm all in on Anthony Edwards. I cannot wait to see him continue to evolve. And I think Timberwolves fans, after the last 20 years of Timberwolves basketball, really the last 30 outside of the KG era, which was still pretty rough for the most part, it's a good time to be a Minnesota fan. Lauren Gunn, what can the good folks check out from you this week? You got the podcast with your brother, Mavs Moneyball. What would you like to plug as we wrap up here today?
Yeah, so you can follow me on Twitter at the Lauren Gunn. That's Gunn with two N's. I do co-host the Gunshot Podcast with my brother, Grant Gunn. Our big thing is we try to cover all teams regardless of market size. So come check us out there. Come talk any team, any player, any storyline. We've got you covered.
There you go. Corbin, what about you, my friend?
That is dope. You can find me on Twitter at CorbinNBA. You know, we are working on some projects right now. PHNX Mercury for sure. Let's Make Moves, just a few, you know, projects here. We're trying to get something started for the season though, so you know, I got some things on the stove. But at Corbin NBA is where you'll find any and all stuff I will be doing, so definitely check that out as well. Appreciate it.
There you go. Well, it was great reconnecting, guys, this week. I appreciate you making the time per usual. Lauren, Corbin, you have yourselves a great rest of your weekend, and I will talk to y'all very soon. All right, that'll do it for the Monday, August 15th, 2022 edition here on the Chase the Most podcast. Thank you again to Corbin and Lauren for coming on today's edition of the program. Greatly appreciate it. Don't forget, folks, you can also support the show. Very easy. Leave this show a 5-star rating and a review on Apple Podcasts or Spotify. That is indeed how you listen to today's program. It helps other people find the show, and it helps this very show continue to grow. New episodes every day this week, so check out for that here on this very feed. All the good stuff, and you have yourself a great Monday. Uncle Derek, how'd I do?
Nicely done, nephew. Chase Thomas Podcast. Hell yeah.